From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck here in the Wow Business Studios, where you can get 2 months free on super fast business internet when you switch to Wow. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com. Thank you so much for joining us today. Bill Cameron, the host of the show, is off today for the best of reasons, as he's going to see ZZ Top tonight in Tuscaloosa, despite the passing of Dusty Hill earlier this week. ZZ Top, they canceled the show Wednesday, that was going to be somewhere in South Carolina, but they've decided to resume their tour tonight with, I think it'll only be the second show in 50 years without Dusty Hill, a ZZ Top show. They performed a few weeks ago with the guitar tech on bass instead of Dusty, and that's going to be the lineup tonight as well. But I imagine a very special ZZ Top show to go to tonight. The first performance with since the passing of Dusty Hill in Tuscaloosa at the amphitheater, and Bill on his way to Tuscaloosa now for the show, and we're happy that we've got somebody willing to step in who can help us keep the show. And on a day where there's a lot going on across a lot of different sports, some involving Auburn University, some of them just, out in the atmosphere. But we welcome in from the Auburn Observer, our good friend Justin Ferguson to sit in with us for as long as he wants on today's show. How you doing, Justin?
No, I'm here for the long haul.
Absolutely.
You got me for 2 hours.
Well, let's start by telling folks about the fine work you and the gang do at the Observer.
Yeah, you can subscribe to the Auburn Observer. It's a newsletter that comes out about 3 or 4 times a week. It'll be more 4 times a week now that we're going to have football here starting next week. But yeah, covering Auburn football, men's basketball, analysis, some of the stuff you can get, like this week alone, breakdown of Damari Alston, the new running back commitment for Auburn. Did a bunch of scheduling talk about Auburn with Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, here very shortly. Had a story about Bo Nix and just some of the improvements, some of the stuff that Dan, you asked about in Hoover, using some of that in there.
I always get a kick when I see an answer to Mike. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Oh, for sure.
Whenever you see anyone else using the answer that to the question you asked, it's like I take full responsibility for all subsequent work. No, that's and Bo and I think Bo and Owen were both really insightful.
Yes.
In the smaller room when we were able to ask them a couple of questions about the upcoming team, and we got some players, in my experience, tend to be more willing to name names.
Oh, yes.
Especially in an off season, like coming, with the season on the horizon, you'll get, like, after a scrimmage, the coach might be pretty mum about who looked good and who didn't, but a player will go out there and tell you, this guy.
Coaches have to manage egos and they have to manage all that as well, and players will just shout out their buddies.
Yeah, and they like seeing their names in print, surrounded by those quotes. So Owen Papo was willing to talk about some defensive linemen, some linebackers in the secondary, and Bo had some comments about his teammates, but also about himself, right?
Yeah.
Just some self analysis.
And that story from Thursday, a lot about kind of the changes to this offense and how that can make him a better quarterback. Getting under center, the style of offense, can that make him a much better quarterback? And then we have a podcast that goes along with it as well. If you subscribe, you get an extra podcast once a week, a bonus episode in the middle of the week, but it's also on the weekends, just wherever you listen to podcasts, look up Auburn Observer. And like I said, subscribe there, auburnobserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year. Once you sign up, everything we do gets emailed to your inbox. You read and listen on your own time. And it's a pretty good time to get on board because we're going to go full speed here starting next week.
That's right. Thursday of next week is the beginning of fall practice.
Yep. They report, and I believe Friday and Saturday is when things start rolling for practices.
That's right. First day of the fall term at Auburn is Monday the 16th, I believe. Mm-hmm. Drew should give me the thumbs up. But that's Monday the 16th, and then just a little bit more than a month away from Auburn's opener against Akron. So should be a lot of headlines from the football team in the next month or so, and we'll talk to you a little bit about that later on. I mean, there's no shortage of storylines going into the season for the Auburn football team that you've been covering all off season at the Observer. So we'll get into some of that. I think the pressing news right now, as a Major League Baseball fan and a fan of this time of year and the off season, just for the player movement, and sort of how fortunes can change really quickly. This is an exciting time. And if you haven't been following, the last 24, 48 hours has been about as busy a trade deadline as I can remember in Major League Baseball with some big stars, and the Atlanta Braves have been very active. So we can get to that a little bit later too. NBA draft last night is something I'd like to ask you about to start things off.
Sure.
Sharif Cooper and JT Thor both selected in the NBA draft, not first round picks as had been expected, I think, by the consensus.
Yeah,
I think the consensus was that they were both,
especially Sharif,
even if it was late first round picks, they both looked like first rounders. JT, I think it had been more of a when he announced he wasn't seen as a first round pick, perception maybe had changed over the course of the build up to the draft. But both are taken in the second round, and I think both end up in pretty good situations, all things considered, even if they weren't selected as early as people might have thought, or certainly as the players themselves were hoping.
Yeah, and the Sharif thing will be very interesting to me, and I don't know what all went into that. There was, on the ESPN broadcast here in the second round last night, Kendrick Perkins was like insinuating some things about Sharif and the interview process and stuff like that. And I don't know, and I hadn't heard anything along those lines, so I'm very curious to see if anything else comes out about it, or if an NBA team just thought all along this dude's a second round pick. The problem is, though, guys who get paid a lot of money to cover the NBA draft and do a very good job of it had him as a first round prospect pretty much the whole way through. I think what we saw last night, though, is that outside about the first three or four picks of the draft, mock drafts and rankings went all out the window. I mean, you had guys like Sharif and Jared Butler going in the middle of the second round that a lot of people had first round grades on.
Yeah, it seems like with the NBA draft, once you get past, I mean, because earlier this week it seemed like people knew the order of 1, 2, and 3. You know, who was going to go and which teams were going to take them.
Scotty Barnes at 4 kind of really changed everything.
Well, I mean, once you get to 4, it almost feels like a situation now where teams, I mean, they care a little bit about value, but like if they like a guy, I mean, Josh Primo goes 12th overall, which is much higher than anyone had him projected as, going in, throughout this process.
And that was the thing about JT Thor possibly going in the first round. All it takes is one team. If Josh Primo is a first rounder, JT Thor could have been a first rounder. Does one team fall in love with you enough? And I think Thor is landing in a really good situation. I had said on our podcast and a couple times, I didn't think everybody like mocking Sharif to the Hawks. I didn't think that was a good idea because it was like, okay, he would play behind Trae Young. There's really no path of him to develop into a guy who would play.
He would play behind Trae Young if he's the number two point guard. Which
do you use a first round pick on a guy like that? Right? Do you use a first round pick on a guy who might be your backup point guard? But when you get into the second round, it's like, okay, that makes a whole lot more sense. And so, Sharif has got to be a better shooter. He's got to be a better defender. He's going to spend some time in the G League, which fortunately in Atlanta, it's in College Park. So like it's not like you're going to be shuttled back and forth and it's going to be a tough process. You can bounce pretty easily between those two places. And he's going to have a chance, I think, to develop into Trey's understudy. And if he shows out well enough in the second unit with the Hawks in time, can it lead you to get a chance of getting paid, either with the Hawks or with another team. And so it'd be very interesting to see. I think it's a good system for him to fall in. I think if he can end up being a guy who can be an understudy to Trae Young in time, the thing there is that like those guys play very similarly. I know Trey's got a lot more range and is a three-point shooter, but guys who like to throw flashy passes and get to the basket and get to the foul line, the Hawks, eventually what they want to do is be able to be like, even with Trae Young off the floor, we can still run the offense like we want to.
And I understand the importance in the NBA of finding a superstar, of finding someone who can be, you know, especially a homegrown, you know, superstar. Finding someone in the draft. I mean, the Bucks are maybe, you know, the shining example of the when you're a team that maybe can't count on going out and signing marquee free agents every offseason. It's vital to find someone.
Suns are the same way.
Find someone in the lottery who can turn into a superstar, even if they're not. Now, even if you don't have the first pick, if you can find someone a little bit later, which I think is why you'll see these potential heavy. I mean, that's how a Josh Primo goes 12th overall after that one season of college basketball. I mean, he was coming off the bench for Alabama at points last year, and it's like he's a lottery.
Ton of upside with him.
Yeah, lottery pick and the second round of the NBA draft, always, but especially this year, it's like if you watch a lot of college basketball, you're stunned at the quality of some of these names out there in the second round. Herb Jones goes in the second round last night.
And Herb Jones is a quintessential college basketball player that doesn't necessarily translate to the NBA what they want out of their big men, but like that's a good basketball player that in time can develop. I mean, they run through it every year. Look at the second round value you can get. A guy like Chris Middleton ends up being a key player on a championship team down the second round. Draymond Green, the most obvious example of the recent years. And then, of course, second round pick, Nikola Jokic, who just won MVP of the league. So, like, you can get really good value in the second round. And, you know, there's no guarantee that those guys are just they're just sworn to always be role players or bench players. Like, guys can develop and become big name guys in time, even out of the second round. And I think there's some real quality in the second round of this draft. And JT and Sharif are part of that.
Listening to PJ Carlissimo on ESPN radio last night talking about, I mean, it seems like the philosophy now is you can either draft somebody who can help you immediately doing something on an NBA floor. You can go get a shooter, you can go get a shot blocker, you can go get a perimeter defender, you know, somebody who's got a skill that can help you right now, and you sort of hope that everything else rounds into form. Or you take somebody who maybe isn't doing anything, you know, any one part of their game at an NBA level right now, but they're 17 years old or they're 18 years old, and that could change over time. And JT Thor probably wasn't the only, even from the SEC, JT Thor probably wasn't the only project that a team took in the second round last night. Scotty Lewis from Florida went late in the draft. BJ Boston taken from Kentucky.
That's a project.
I mean, these are guys that I can see why an NBA team would think, just, you know, if everything breaks right, we've got a starter or maybe somebody better even than a starter in a couple of years, but everything's got to break right.
And it was a really good, it was a really strong undrafted free agent class, too. I mean, guys like Mac McClung.
Trenton Watford,
Mossy Oteague, John Petty, who I have long said I am a John Petty believer, that, like, if a dude can be a deadeye, you can get a spot in the league. And when you think about Sharif Cooper and those guys going,
how long has JJ Redick been in the league?
Yeah, exactly. Sharif Cooper, when you look at a guy like Sharif Cooper, it's like, we see the quality of second point guards in the NBA. Sharif can be that. And JT Thor, the Hornets, fantastic situation for him, because this is a team that's young and is going to be willing to grow with him and see, you know, what he's made of. They've got a squad right now, because last night they get James Bouknight to pair up with LaMelo Ball. And then they have some really, like, they're building a squad of athletic wings and big men when you think of Miles Bridges and some of the other guys they've picked up recently. And he's going to be right there with them.
And you mentioned undrafted guys. A couple other. I mean, Deshaun Nix is an interesting story because he snubbed UCLA to go to the G League and was the point guard on that G League Ignite team. A little bit unfortunate that he goes undrafted, considering that he walked away from college basketball with the belief that the G League Ignite was a springboard into not just the NBA draft, but the first round. I don't know what the rules are of if you go play for the G League Ignite for 1 year and then don't get drafted. I don't know if he can go back or if
I would imagine he would be able to have a shot.
I would hope there's some future for him
there. Because Scoot's playing for 2 years, so like it's definitely
yeah. I would hope there's something there for Deshaun Nix, even if even if it didn't work out in the NBA draft. And Greg Brown, who was a very big recruit, signed with Texas last year. That was, I mean his recruitment and decision to go to Texas instead of playing the G League maybe gave Shaka Smart another year in Austin, because the ice was pretty thin when Greg Brown made that announcement. He goes in the second round last night, and that's another guy where, Yeah, I can see why. I can see why an NBA team would say, "All right, well, let's take our chances."
Well, it just shows why all this is a gamble, yeah. One way or another. When you know people were looking at it last night,
the scratch off tickets in second round.
Well, and then in like JT Thor and Sharif Cooper's decisions, you can look at it and say, you should have came back. And it's like it was a risk to go back, and it's a risk to go out because you can be an elite 5-star prospect, and it might not translate into first round. Even if everybody thinks you're going to be a first round draft night, you know where you land is where you land. And on the flip side of it, you do come back for another year. You have a chance that your stock goes down because the NBA, like we were saying, loves upside more than anything. The younger, the better. The more, like when you go reach for a guy like Josh Primo, that's a really good example. And there's always a chance you could hurt yourself and you know really hurt your stock.
And I'm curious to see. As we continue in the name, image, and likeness world,
yeah,
I'm curious to see if there are college basketball players that will more strongly consider staying in school.
Yeah,
not just because maybe another year of college basketball would help you, you know, before you ever go into the NBA draft, but also, I mean, we've seen guys make the decision not to get. To go in the NBA immediately, but just to be able to earn a paycheck playing basketball somewhere, to earn some money playing somewhere. Sometimes it's
trying to get on a two-way deal.
It's a crisis. You know, the family needs money and they can't continue to play college basketball. And now you can earn a little bit of money while you play college basketball, especially at a marquee program. I mean, I think about Johnny Juzang would maybe be an example of Johnny Juzang could have gone in the second round last night of the NBA draft.
Probably.
Or he can be the leading scorer on the nation's number one team. Mm-hmm. In Los Angeles this season and going to the NBA draft next year. I wonder if he made the best decision for himself for a variety of reasons by choosing to stay in school.
And people are always going to say that about Sharif because of his following, and he has a lot of NIL potential. And for most kids, NBA money, whether it's G League money, two-way contract, Exhibit 10, whatever you're going to be on, or even playing overseas, it's going to be better money than you can get in NIL. But then there are some who are big name prospects, big names because of their social media presences and their platforms, that might serve themselves better by staying in school. And that's going to be a new kind of, you know, it's not going to be for everybody. I think there's going to be a select few. And I think Sharif would have been an interesting test case of that. And I think Johnny Juzang is going to be an interesting test case of that this upcoming year. But, you know, there's always that. Maybe not necessarily stability, but there's that instant like, oh, I'm getting paid to play basketball, and that's all I have to do. Like that's a big thing that a lot of people are going to be able to lean on. So I'm interested to see how much of that is in there, because I think NIL, if it keeps going like we think it could, some guys can really make a lot of it without having to bounce to the league.
Who is in their team's rotation first, JT or Sharif? Could have been my mailbag question.
Yeah, it could have. It was late, though.
I know, it was late.
Sharif?
I think so, too.
Just because I think JT needs more time. Sharif.
Low expectations in Charlotte, though. They got time. Can play.
They do have time.
They can play a young guy in Charlotte.
They do have time. I think with Sharif, though, it's like, you know, Lou Will's not getting any younger. And if the Hawks could see in the second round that they lock down their backup point guard for the next couple of years for Trey, that's a win. And I'm sure they'll try to do whatever it takes to make sure they can get that. And they want a cheap one because you're paying Trey Young a lot of money.
Yeah, well, one of the shocking things to me about last night's draft, and I haven't said this since like 1998. I like this Charlotte Hornets roster.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the last time anybody said that.
They're athletic. They're fun. They're young. And, I mean, I'm telling you, Book Knight and Ball is going to be a awesome backcourt. And also, talking about other
they
guys.
They picked up someone later in the draft, too, right?
Kai Jones from Texas.
That's right, yeah.
The big, very agile big man from Texas. And speaking of other Auburn players, I said it last night. The Orlando Magic getting Jalen Suggs to fall to them is huge. Because Chuba Okeke, man, you've got an absolute stud as a playmaker next to you right now for the future. And then Isaac Okoro is now going to be on the same team with Mobley out of USC. An elite defensive center, and that Cleveland Cavaliers team has now quickly, by adding Okoro and Mobley, That's going to be a fierce defense in the way the style they're going to try to play.
Cleveland seems to be avoiding the mistake of a total bust in the lottery. Maybe nobody's turning into like a first-team All-NBA player anytime soon, although you have some good, even better than just good, very good starters. But no one who's like is going to be out of the league in two years either. Like, it doesn't seem like they've totally whiffed.
I mean, they got the best big man in the draft and a great defensive presence, and then last year they got the best defender in the draft.
So no Anthony Bennett's on the recent Cavaliers draft.
They're building a team, which is a very good sign, I think, for a place like Cleveland where you're not going to get elite free agents to come there unless LeBron James is playing for you, and like even then it wasn't always easy.
That's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. I'm Dan Peck. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive. We'll be back. Stick around.
The Drive continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, hanging out with us on a Friday afternoon. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. You can also text the show at a phone number that I'm still working to memorize. 334-564-1840 is how you can reach out on the ESPN 106.7 text box. And our number one of the show is brought to you by the good folks at Kia of Auburn and KiaofAuburn.com, where you're always number one. Let's go to the Kia of Auburn hotline and Pat, who's been hanging on for a little while. What's up, Pat?
Hey, guys. Man, y'all can put as much of a positive spin on that as possible, but they both made horrible decisions in my mind. I said before, when I thought Sharif was going to go in the first round, I thought he should came back because he could have been a lottery pick. I mean, that's the worst case scenario, going to a team where you're just going to be stuck, you know, behind the star. I mean, probably MVP of the league maybe one year. And then you're not going to get the money. Because in the second round, you're not getting the money. At least if you went at the end of the first round, you'd at least get on a good team. Now they are a good team, but you're not going to play. So I just think it was horrible. I hope that this kind of makes Bruce kind of change his tune on, you know, if they can make the pros, they should go. I think if you can turn yourself into a lottery pick, you need to stay. That's just the bottom line, because he would have got so much attention next year on our team with the team that we're going to bring here. I mean, I feel so bad for them. I love both of them, but they were giving bad advice. Bad advice.
Yeah, and it is interesting because, you know, Sharif was one of those guys where it was seen pretty obvious throughout the draft process that he was going to be a first rounder, and then last night was really the only time falling to the second round was ever really a possibility. And you wonder why everybody who covered the draft and all the people had it like that, and that's not how it ended up. But yeah, I'm pro. Get your money when you can. I'm pro athletes making the best decisions for themselves. This is one of the few times where I've said, yeah, you probably could have been served best, especially now with NIL, like we were talking about earlier, coming back, because he, to me, seemed like a guy who could have taken that next step. There were clear parts of his game that he could have gotten better at in year two at Auburn. I think JT Thor is pretty dead set on, I can go play pro, play in pro ball and like go ahead and provide for his family right away. Sharif, that one is a little bit more because, I mean, honestly, everyone thought he was going to be a first rounder, and I wonder what that's going to be like. I wonder what Bruce Pearl's thoughts on all this is, because they are pretty adamant when guys can go in the lottery, go on and go. But like, I know the JT Thor decision and the Sharif one, to an extent, it was kind of like, you know, we weren't entirely sure how all that was going to shake out. So yeah, it is a really interesting chain of events, and I'll be very curious to see how that affects future guys trying to go into the league from Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a risk you take when you opt out of your remaining years of college basketball to go to the draft. But I mean, it can happen. It sometimes it can pay off, and sometimes it makes it a little bit more of a journey.
And in a pure basketball fit, like Pat was saying, you know, pure basketball fit, I like Sharif in that offense with the Hawks, but he's absolutely right. I mean, your ceiling with that team is back up to a superstar.
Yeah, who's only going to give you like 5 minutes a game, probably. because he plays most of the game. But, you know, I guess with Sharif, it just seemed like to me he wasn't hurting for money, supposedly. And
he was going to.
I mean, but he—that's the position we really kind of need. I mean, we're counting on Wendell Green and those guys, but I mean, it sure would have been great to have him there. But it just seemed to me that he could have definitely been like the star of the NCAA next year, the whole year long. They would have been talking about him. Heck, they were even talking about him during the pro days when they were the NBA pro. Where they were doing all their drills and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they couldn't stop talking about how great he was. So, I mean, if they would have just been saying that all next year, I mean, he would have been on the cover of everything. So, I just hate when they promise people stuff or they make them think that there's guarantees and there's never guaranteed. That's the problem. And he could have guaranteed a lot higher. I know that for sure. But I will still cheer for him.
Yeah, and Pat, to your point, like that you just made is like. ESPN was very surprised he was still there in the second round the way they were talking about him. And so, yeah, I mean, he would have been a guy who would have been able to make a lot of money on NIL, but he's going to the league. He went to the league a year early, he could have stayed for as long.
It also seems like it illustrates a little bit of how the NBA has changed, because I think that a player with Sharif Cooper's skill set, even at 6 feet, 6'1"
He's a few inches taller. He's a first rounder.
Right. I mean, Lonzo Ball was the second overall pick in the draft and is.
Can't shoot.
Well, no, he was basically Sharif Cooper, but 6'7". Like a 6'7" version of Sharif Cooper.
Yeah.
Played 1 year of college basketball. Was pretty good in that one year.
I would
see him. But went second overall in the draft, after 1 year. Sharif, 6 inches shorter, largely the same skill set, goes, and it's also. I think teams would have overlooked a work-in-progress jump shot.
Yes.
And taken him based on the other skills. Now that's so important that, I mean, Corey Kispert goes in the lottery, right? I mean, or just outside it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a guy that a couple years ago, the lottery.
Moses Moody was a lottery.
Moses Moody, absolutely. Good call, Pat. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, agree. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Talk some more with Justin Ferguson when we come back. Love to hear from you as well. Stick around. This is The Drive.
Turn up some more yardage on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in hour number one of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, hanging out with you on a Friday, and let's get back to the phones. And Terry is on the line. What's up, Terry?
Dan, how you doing?
Doing all right. Good to hear from you.
Good to talk to you as well, Justin. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fantastic. I agree with your last caller. Was it Pat?
Yeah.
I think they both made a big mistake. Now, Cooper especially, to go 48. If you told me before the night that Cooper was going to go behind J.T. Thor and Josh Primo, I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, I would agree.
As far as J.T. Thor goes, he's, 6'8", 6'9", with a great wingspan. He can shoot. Well, gee, the NBA is full of that. So, there's guys walking the streets that can do that. So, good luck. And I know he's got an NBA body, and I wish him the best, but Cooper, I agree with everything you said. He's going to Atlanta. He's going to be behind, probably the best player in the league at some point in the next 5 years.
It's a chance, yeah.
And or people are going to be saying that anyway. A guy's going to win a championship, probably an MVP. I don't fathom it. I really don't.
It's not
ridiculous.
Terry, I would say it's not impossible for someone to begin their NBA career the way Sharif Cooper is beginning his,
and I'll play his, again,
but you're right. You're absolutely right. Once you get out of the first round, the odds, the likelihood of going from second round pick to you know, even a player. Starter. I mean, I wonder, in all seriousness, like, I wonder how many NBA teams right now have a player they took in the second round in their rotation. Because I don't That's know true. If it's, I mean, I wonder how many NBA yeah. teams you could say that about, where it's a player they actually took yeah. in the second round of a draft. And they've, I know Boston has done that a couple of times where yeah. like they'll take, and even some SEC players, right? Like they'll take an SEC player or two and they'll say, oh yeah, that's a guy who, you know, a Robert Williams or a Grant Williams, you know, these sorts of guys who, yeah. I don't even know if those are second round picks.
Those are first round picks.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. it's rare.
Mentioned earlier with guys like Draymond Green and Chris Middleton and Nikola Jokic and like there are a ton of second round success stories in the NBA, but they had a path where you could say, okay, if it works out, few of those guys are like, all right, well, I could go end up being a big player for this team. Oh, but one of the best players in the league is in the exact position I have to play. Because the other thing with Sharif is, like, it ain't like he can go play another position. He is a point guard through and through.
See, Justin, Dan, it's like saying, it'd be like saying Karl Malone and Charles Barkley would have a load of rings if it wasn't for Michael Jordan.
Well, although that is, I would say that's true. It's just
it doesn't, true.
But it doesn't.
True.
But it doesn't put any jewelry on your hand.
Nope.
Like, exactly.
Like, no, and I think with and we were talking off the air. I mean, the sense we got about JT was that this was a guy who wanted to start his professional basketball career
yeah.
as quickly as possible. Yeah. Maybe that played a role in the decision to skip his senior year of high school and play.
Because where he got picked last night was exactly where people projected yeah. him at the beginning. Now, he had more buzz about him after the combine because he played really well in it, but then it kind of settled back towards that early second round range where he ended up going. Sharif, though, this is the part I don't understand, is that Sharif was widely projected by pretty much anybody who covers the draft to be a first rounder, and last night was really the only time where it was like, oh, wow, he could go to the second. Oh, wow, he's going into the middle of the second round. And it's like, there's a disconnect there that I'm not sure what happened, whether it's agent stuff or whether it's, you know, like, I don't know.
I mean, he could have finished second to a lot of teams, right? They could have said, we'll take Sharif Cooper, but this other person's on the board and we're going to take them yeah. instead. I mean, we don't know.
But it was like people were going to try to get him late in the first round, not middle of the second round. And I don't know what happened there, but I do know one thing. We're talking differently about his decision and what happened. If he goes late first round like people expected, then today it's middle of the second round. Because middle of the second round, that's obvious. That's obvious where it was like, oh, he probably could have come back and really helped his case out more. Late first round, yes, he could have come back and been a lottery pick like Pat was saying earlier, but at least you could see where the logic was there and go ahead and get that first round money. But
were you guys surprised at some of the names that went in front of him?
Oh,
I
yeah.
was shocked.
Oh, yeah. Especially point guards.
Well, I mean, well, yeah, and we were saying, I mean, Josh Primo going
Primo
as high as he did is maybe the shock of the draft. I
yeah.
mean, that really is. I mean, from where he was projected, and there's a lot of potential.
And that's what the Spurs do, though. They yeah. they go reach for guys, and they go get their guys, and I was surprised by that. But I also thought that somebody could have had that vision for a guy like Sharif. But,
yeah, but Justin, they could afford to do that when they had Tim Duncan.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's also, you got to keep in mind that the Spurs have been picking in the lottery a lot more frequently than they have been.
Believe it's the first time in franchise history they missed the playoffs in back-to-back seasons.
Yeah.
And I grew up a Spurs fan. That just blew my mind when I saw that last night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's, I was like, shocking.
You know, when you had Tim Duncan, you could afford to take chances on guys because that yeah. was your centerpiece. He was the guy you were going to build around, and hopefully felt pieces would fall into place, and they did. Because they got lucky with Ginobili and Parker and all those guys.
Yeah. And they did a great job on Kawhi.
The hard part.
Right. People didn't have Kawhi as highly as they did.
The hard part is finding a Tim Duncan. Right? The hard part, yeah. what we were saying, we appreciate the phone call, Terry. I mean, the hard part is, yeah, I mean,
you remember, that was a stealth tank. Remember,
oh,
if
yes,
you remember,
absolutely.
Actually, David Robinson goes down, and it's like, oh, all right, well, yeah, yeah. we're gonna for 1 year, we're gonna be real bad and have a chance to get
it's sort of like how the Colts ended up with Andrew Luck, right?
Yes,
like it's like you weren't really the worst team in the league,
but it's kind of like how the Patriots have been. Is like you get the benefit of the doubt when you have it for a while, and now the Spurs are not in that situation anymore, and that is a bizarre roster. That is a bizarre roster when you start trying to put it all together. Yeah, what that looks like.
You don't know if they're coming or going, right? I just didn't realize
though, if JT and Sharif both can stick with their respective teams and make it around, I mean, they're going to see each other quite a bit. Those are two Southeast Division teams. They play a lot, and they're, you know, not too far from home. Sharif definitely, but like Charlotte's just a short trip from Atlanta too.
Oh, no, absolutely, and that's, and I don't want to, because I think the other dangerous thing to do is play the result too much and say like, oh, you made a mistake yeah. because look at I mean the draft, there's some risk in going in the yeah. NBA draft. You don't know exactly when you're going to go, but I do. It was a surprise to see Sharif Cooper.
That's what makes it the thing. It's like you said, Dan, you don't want to play the result too much, but when the result is as shocking as it is, you're just like, okay, what happened? And that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if anybody has ever been able to put a finger on necessarily what happened, that all these people had these projections that are much high, and it seems like the actual teams were lower on him than everybody else was and the media was. And on top of that, you know, the draft had a lot of surprises last night.
Yeah, I wonder if we're in for just like, you know, what the NBA draft from now on is, maybe teams will have a pretty good idea of what the top five looks like, and after that, like, throw your hands up and you know, strap in and see who likes who.
Well, you're getting guys from so many different places yeah. now. You're getting dudes who play at big schools, dudes who play at small schools, guys who played overseas, guys who play in the G League. Like,
teams aren't afraid of seniors anymore because they look at the North Carolina Phoenix Cam Johnson. They look at Cam Johnson stepping in and playing like a role player immediately. It's not as scary as it used to be to take a senior. Terrence Mann
had a phenomenal playoffs.
It's a sign of the draft changing a little bit, and maybe the Auburn players last night not the beneficiary of some of those some of those perspective changes.
After the last two drafts having an incredible run, because Chuma went a lot earlier than people expected, and then Isaac definitely went earlier than people expected as well. So, I mean, those are both really good spots. So it kind of turned on you a little bit last night.
Let's get to the phones, and Slack is on the line. What's up, Slack?
What's up, guys?
Good to hear from you, bud.
I kind of think Sharif's in a pretty good situation with Atlanta, because Atlanta needs a backup point guard.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to fit right in. You know, I hear people talking about G League. Nah. He'd be on the bench coming in for the backup point guard role.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real good chance of that. I mean, Lou Williams was that guy, but they felt like that was the storyline with Atlanta this year, is when Trey was off, they needed somebody else who could kind of make sure the offense doesn't completely change. And to your point, Slack, that's a really good fit, because Trey Young and Sharif Cooper try to play kind of the same way. They try to direct traffic at point guard in a very similar fashion.
Yeah. You know, with I think the salary cap, I think it kind of, you know, with COVID, it kind of fluctuated to where it didn't increase a whole lot.
Yeah.
But I think I read where, you know, a second-round guy like Sharif can get a guaranteed deal 1 year for about anywhere from $6 to $8 million.
Yep.
So I don't think Auburn could pay him $8 million to come back for another year.
Not legally.
So, yeah, not legally. So, you know, I'm going to give you some names. You know, you said you hadn't heard of some second-round guys. The guy that just won the NBA MVP, he's second-round guy.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely right.
Oh, no, there are productive second-round players. I mean, I wasn't trying to say that there's none of them. But
it's hard.
Chris Middleton, yep. Draymond Green, yep. Mark Gasol, all the guys second-round guys. You know.
For a long time, Gilbert Arenas was held up as like the mark of like, because I think he was the first one to go from second round pick to max contract.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
Didn't work out. Didn't work out then. Absolutely. And that's a great point about Sharif's fit in Atlanta too, because I know, and this is something that every front office will do after the draft, but there seemed to be a lot of enthusiasm within the Hawks for the addition of Sharif, even getting him in the second round, a couple of picks in. You know, I think that the GM said they had Sharif ranked much higher than that on their board, mm-hmm. which is maybe a sign of how the organization views him going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Like, it's one of those things where you can see it working out. And the other thing, and I think Kendrick Perkins, one of the few points I heard him make last night that I thought was a pretty good one, was if you're a second rounder, not only can you can still get decent money, but you also go hit free agency earlier. And so if you shine early on, you'll have a little bit more flexibility, because these first rounders, they're usually locked into 2-2 deals or something like that, and where, you know, you're with that team for a very long time with bird rights and all that. So it's better money wise up front, of course, to be in the first round, but you got a lot of flexibility there in the second round.
Did you hear the Perkins comment he made? I thought that was kind of odd.
Yeah, and that's the first I'd ever heard of anything like that, Slack.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. I was kind of upset by him saying that. Like, I don't know if he knows something or he was just talking off the top of his head.
Yeah.
Well, Kwame Brown will tell you. Kwame Brown will tell you the answer to that one, Slack.
Oh, yeah, Kwame will tell you. Appreciate it, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you, Slack. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
That was literally the first I had heard of that. And so when he said that, I was like, okay. So I was expecting today maybe getting some more background on that, a little bit more follow-up, and I hadn't heard anything. I haven't seen anything. Everything I see about Shreve's like, yeah, the Hawks are happy that he fell to him all the way down at the pick they got him at.
Let's see if I can find a reference to, because I don't know if I have a, I don't know if I've seen that transcribed anywhere exactly what Shreve said, but it's, I saw the comment and it's, it's a little bit unusual. So we're talking some NBA draft here with Justin Ferguson following Sharif Cooper and JT Thor getting selected in the NBA draft last night. What we can do is we can step aside for just a minute, take our break. When we come back, maybe some football with Justin Ferguson. Also, we really should mention Suni Lee. At some point,
I was going to say, how much did I talk about her yesterday?
You know, we mentioned it quite a bit yesterday. Now it was. It had already happened, but it hadn't aired on NBC
in prime time, yeah.
Last night. But hopefully, Suni got to enjoy the pizza and the gold medal along with her team after an incredible performance last night from one of the
enrolled Auburn student.
That's right, from Auburn University's gold medal gymnast Suni Lee. And a little piece of news: Auburn gymnastics coach Jeff Grabe is going to be on the show next Wednesday. We're going to talk with Jeff at the 5 o'clock hour next Wednesday. By then, I believe Suni will be done competing in the Olympics completely, so we'll have the entire Olympics
She can still win two more medals.
That's right. We'll have her entire Olympic performance to talk about with Coach Grabe. That's going to be Wednesday at 5 o'clock here on the drive, so you're not going to want to miss that.
Also, Auburn got another medal last night. Annie Laser winning the bronze in the 200, I believe it was the 200 breaststroke.
Absolutely. Way to go, Annie. And great to see swimming and diving still making their presence
SEC
felt.
SEC has dominated that.
Yes.
And, you know, in the non-Katie Ledecky division.
But tell you what, before we get to break, let's throw it to Brett real quick. What's up, Brett?
Hey, Dan, the comment Perkins made, I feel pretty positive. What he's talking about is Sharif's dad.
That's what makes sense
an
to
agent.
Me.
Yeah. He ran and organized the whole trial sessions for Sharif.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say this, that there's other people around the Auburn program who have been coaches at Auburn who have made the same type of comment.
And I believe the line from Kendrick Perkins that is getting circulated the most, that, you know, that's somewhat cryptic, is, I don't want to misquote him, I think he said something to the extent of Sharif's talent isn't the reason he's waiting to be drafted.
Yes.
Right now.
But it's everything that goes with it.
Yes. And that would indicate that it's something else going on in Sharif's life. And, and that would, And as
he mentioned the interview process as well, which would line up with what Brett's saying here as well, if his dad, you know, being the agent.
Yeah, well, if you can't defend, you're not a good outside shooter, and you've got that, there was no way he was going to be a first round. You might not remember this, Dan. When he declared, I said I couldn't believe that he would be a first round draft pick and that Thor should go before Sharif. I mean, guys, if he's in the game, guys who play point guard in the NBA are going to be waving for the ball when he's in the game, because Sharif wasn't able to stop anybody in the SEC from getting into the lane. So NBA is going to be a lot worse. Y'all have a good day.
No, and that's you know, it's something that doesn't, and not just about Sharif, but in general, I think it's When folks project, and this is part of the reason why it's so tough to do so, when you watch a college basketball game and try to project any one of the players to the NBA, it's not just about what they do in a half court offense. It's not just about what they do with the ball in their hands. It's also about, you know, can they keep up defensively? And that's something that is held back prospects for making the jump from college to the pros before. We'll see what the future holds for Sharif, but it is maybe somewhat telling that when folks talk about all the things Sharif does great, and there are any number of things he is brilliant at as a basketball player, and, you know, there are some there's some criticism too, and maybe that can influence, you know, where a player is taken in the draft. But let's take a break. We'll come back. Shadow is hanging on. We'll get to Shadow when we return. Still love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson, you are listening to The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Hour number one of the Friday Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out. Bill Cameron going to see ZZ Top tonight in Tuscaloosa. So if you see Bill at the show and you're there too, I don't know, tell him you're a Drive listener. I don't know. We don't have a policy for if you see him out in the streets. But it's on site. if you see Bill out there at the ZZ Top show. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Let's get to Shadow, who's hanging on before the end of hour number one. What's up, Shadow?
Well, maybe it's a good thing that Bill is going to go see ZZ Top, because this way we get Dan Peck's opinion. Dan Peck, here's the question.
What's up? What's up, Shadow?
Here's the first question. When Pat Dye came to Auburn, was he a great football coach?
I'm gonna tell you, if this is going from history, because I was born during Pat Dye's time at Auburn. Well,
I'm not talking about when he left. I'm talking about when he came to Auburn. Was he a great coach? Yes or no?
My understanding is that it was a somewhat obscure hire by Auburn. People, there were folks who knew Pat Dye, but it wasn't as though he was a household name in college football when Auburn signed him.
Okay, thank you very much. That was an honest answer, in my opinion. And here's the second one. So then, my contention, and please, prove me wrong. It is my contention that Auburn has never hired a great football coach coming in. I'm not talking about how they finished. I'm talking about when they were looking for a football coach. Auburn University has never hired a great football coach. Am I right or wrong?
They have hired up-and-comers pretty much all throughout their history, either guys who have not been head coaches for long or have been head coaches for a little while longer at smaller schools. You mentioned Pat Dye, East Carolina, Wyoming before he came in. Honestly, if you want to look at track record, Brian Hartson might be the most established head coach Auburn's ever picked up, hired from the...
Since you said that, I will tell you, and I have not heard him talk about the offense or the defense. I have not read articles. I do not have a computer. But I'm just going to say, based on what I have seen him do and based on what his assistant coaches are doing, from what I understand, I will make a prediction early.
What's that?
You know, is that Brian Harsin will be the best coach in Auburn history.
Wow. All right.
There you and that would fall into place with, I mean, Brian Harsin, like you said, the most accomplished head coach, probably, or at least the strongest resume as a head coach of anyone Auburn's hired in a long time.
Hey, that's a mic drop from Shadow heading into the hour break.
Stuck the landing.
That's
there you
perfect
go.
Radio, Shadow. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it as always, Shadow. We will we'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back. Hour number two of The Drive. Stick around.
Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Hour number two of the Tuesday edition, or the Friday edition of the... I knew I was gonna get it wrong. I knew I was gonna mess it up.
With the something edition. Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
It's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. I'm Dan Hello. Peck. Drew at the controls. Two-thirds of the regular crew today. Bill Cameron is going to see ZZ Top tonight in Tuscaloosa. He'll tell us...
What's the best ZZ Top song?
Ooh. See, I'm tempted to go with one of the 80s hits, you know, from Eliminator. Like if I had to karaoke a ZZ Top song, it would probably be Sharp Dressed Man.
Sharp Dressed Man is my favorite. I will admit I am not well versed in the deeper cuts of ZZ Top.
Yeah, I mean LaGrange or something like that. I mean, there's some
I was born in 1993.
Yeah, I mean, there's some great stuff from like the pre commercial breakthrough ZZ Top, but I think yeah, I mean, I might go with one of the hits.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that as someone again who doesn't know a ton about ZZ Top, but just kind of like the hits and all that, reading up on them this week, the mainstream crossover appeal that they had with an audience that's not necessarily because they were at their core southern bluesy kind of rock, but yet they had these hits, these mega hits in the 80s that were on MTV and like it was a big. So it was like one of those things. It's like so much of music is different these days, but it's like it's interesting to see like a band like that have such crossover appeal, and it's pretty cool.
Well, and I think something that happened in the 80s too was that, and it's appropriate we're talking about this with MTV turning 40 on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
40th anniversary of the launch of MTV.
When was the last time you turned you watched anything on MTV?
Well, if you turn on MTV now, it's Ridiculousness. It's the show with not, and I don't mean literal ridiculous.
I mean, it is.
Yeah, but I mean the show, the Rob Dyrdek. I saw something recently where it was. It was a breakdown of MTV's schedule for the week.
Yeah.
And it was...
It was like 30 or 40%.
No.
Is it more?
Like MTV's weekly programming.
I bet they play it all through the night.
I think they turn it on at like 5 p.m. Friday and let it run all weekend changing anything else. I think the weekly schedule... This isn't a show... not a channel that goes off the air at 2 a.m. or something. Like they go 24 hours and it's... It's 90-something percent ridiculous reruns, like Ridiculousness reruns. So I couldn't tell you the last time. Like maybe Jersey Shore was the last new show that I was watching on MTV. But I think something that happened with ZZ Top and some other bands in the 80s were they were popular in the 70s or even to an extent the 60s, but then they started putting out videos and found an even new audience on top of what they... Because like bands like Van Halen and the Talking Heads had a following in the 70s, but the music videos... Yeah. Turned it to a brand new level, and I think ZZ Top is another band.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You could like the the videos to go along with the songs from Eliminator. You know,
it's kind of crazy
broke them into something brand new.
It's kind of crazy though when you think about it, because nowadays it's like people they still make music videos, but they're not that quite as big of a deal as they used to be. Because like music videos, like that was a signal that was like, okay, this song is one of our best. This is a banger. You know, this is the one we're going to go with.
Although
you
don't
see it quite as much because there's not really places where you have to go to YouTube and watch them.
Yeah, I think most of the top viewed YouTube videos of all time are music videos from different bands. Like,
yes.
I think if you were to look, but you're right. It's not, it's not like it was. Where,
it's whatever BTS just put out is usually the number one most viewed.
Right. Well, what's her name? She's got the album today. Billie Eilish.
It's pretty good.
That's a pretty good list. There's your music corner.
Yeah, ZZ Top and Billie Eilish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Highly recommend.
And that's why at MTV's birthday as well, which you know, if you didn't, you go celebrate in your own way.
Speaking of MTV, I heard that the new HBO Max documentary on Woodstock '99 is terrible.
I almost went. I was a little bit young, and so we decided.
You almost went to Woodstock.
I almost went to Woodstock '99.
Wow.
Yeah, I was. It's the summer.
Who did you want to go see?
Ooh, who did I want to go see? And I would have been into. Let me see here. Summer '99. I was into Rage Against the Machine.
Rage, yeah.
Red Hot Chili Peppers. Californication had just come out.
Okay.
The comeback had started with the Chili Peppers. I liked the Fugees. I would have been fired up to see Wyclef. I was in a with a circle that was super into the Dave Matthews Band.
Okay,
that's not for me.
You weren't in the new metal.
I wasn't,
because Woodstock '99 got blamed, like a lot of stuff. Yeah. Apparently, in the documentary where it like blames new metal.
Yeah, I wasn't into the Biscuit or Korn. I know people were super into those guys. Yeah. You know, I might have been. I think that's the year I liked the Offspring. So maybe they're in that mix too, because that's Pretty Fly for a White Guy. Like, yeah. That's Americana, I think, in that era. So there were a couple bands I would have been, but I was young. I mean, 2 years later, I'm probably at Woodstock '99, but in the summer of '99, I was too young to go. So, but I dodged a bullet. It sounds like a major bullet by all accounts.
Are you a music festival guy?
You know, I went to the Warped Tour a couple of times. I'm a Warped Tour veteran.
This week was the 10th anniversary of the time I almost thought I was going to die at Warped Tour in Atlanta.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Was it storms or
heatstroke?
Heatstroke. Yeah, that'll do it.
Because this was back before music festivals were like, we should probably put water out for people so they don't die. It's like, no, you got to pay $5 for a bottle, and I'm like, I'm broke and about to go to college.
Nothing was learned from Woodstock '99.
I will never forget that day, though, because I knew I was in trouble, because the first band comes up on stage and I'm leaning up against kind of like the cage where they have the sound technician, the engineers and all that back there at the board and all that. And we're in there, and me and my friends are back there. First band comes up, and I think it's like Attack or something like that. Metalcore band.
Yeah, we talk about Attack all the time on the drive.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, the drop goes, and Pit, you know, circle pit ahead of me, there's a girl who just boom hits the deck like within the first five seconds of the song. I was like, oh, we're in trouble. Yep. This is going to be a long day. And it was, because by the end of that day, I thought I was going to die.
We'll get more music festival memories from Justin Ferguson in the days and weeks to come. You know, a couple things going on in the world of sports. We mentioned the Major League Baseball trade deadline,
Yankees want everybody who can hit home runs.
I mean, what has happened? I mean, when you look at like MLB trade rumors or one of these sites that tries to like boil it down.
Oh, yeah.
So many players have changed teams in just the last.
Dude.
I mean the big news, because we didn't have the Turner and Scherzer trade had not gone down when we ended the show yesterday. It looked like Max Scherzer might be headed to the Padres.
Right.
The Los Angeles Dodgers to pull the old Lee Corso and say, not so fast, my friend.
That was the one that got me, because I was like, oh, Scherzer on the Dads. That'll be great. Like, that's a fun one. And then it's like, no, actually the Dodgers are going to get him and Trey Turner.
Well, sure, and Scherzer seemingly balances out the NL West a little bit with some of those, you know, with the other teams. But instead, no, the Dodgers, in a move that maybe indicates
four aces.
Well, I don't know if we're going to see Trevor Bauer again anytime soon. The Dodgers making the move for Max Scherzer would indicate to me, I wonder the next time you'll see him in a Dodgers uniform. Clayton Kershaw is due back. Mm-hmm. And then yes, the Dodgers on top of that
Trey Turner
to play second base next to Corey. I mean, the second, and then, I mean, a couple of incredible,
not bad, because Turner's not that great of a defender, but an incredible offensive presence
and some incredible
all-star.
Well, the double play combinations that were formed, because the Dodgers now have Trey Turner alongside Corey Seager, you know, in the middle, just a great combination. And the Mets, who went out and added Javi Baez from the Chicago Cubs to play second base next to Francisco Lindor, who will be back shortly from his injury.
Yeah.
And Baez, I guess, had been telling people that's sort of where he's a longtime friends with Lindor. They wanted to be teammates. They get their wish, and the Mets go out and add
Cubs. Just saying, everybody's gone.
Everyone from the 2016 team. They traded.
Apparently, they
traded the scoreboard. Did you hear that? The Wrigley Field scoreboard is headed to Los Angeles.
Apparently, the Braves were looking into trying to get Craig Kimbrel from them, trying to bring him in, because they need a lot of bullpen help. But I don't know if the asking price might have been a little too much.
The Braves were busy though, and they went out and got Eddie Rosario, outfielder for the Twins. They also added Adam Duvall from the Marlins, former Brave Adam Duvall.
Remember, earlier this year, absolutely torched the Braves one night.
That's right. Who was a nice offensive piece last year at times during the shortened season. So the Braves in need of outfield bats, they add him. And they added Jorge Soler from the Kansas City Royals, and they also added one of several relief pitchers who could make a difference down the stretch. The you know I, I was glad to see, and Craig Kimbrell's another one, you know, the bad teams that decided, like, we don't need a closer. It's a luxury. It's a really nice radio in a car that doesn't work.
Right.
Like, you gotta do something with that. Mm-hmm. And I like to see the Diamondbacks traded Joakim Soria, which is a good move. The Cubs getting something for Craig Kimbrell. The Braves going and getting the Pirates closer. The Phillies added Ian Kennedy, who's the Rangers closer. So you've seen a lot of bad teams decide, like, oh, we don't need a closer. Let's give them to somebody who could actually use that relief pitching in the playoffs or in a playoff push. The Rockies decided not to do that because they're
the Rockies,
a poorly run Major League Baseball organization.
They love to let just guys leave.
But no, I mean, seemed like, you know, we weren't sure
what Story would have been on the move.
And Story's not trading. I mean, the Rockies have a 36-year-old have a 36-year-old closer who was a non-roster invitee this offseason, who came to camp, won the job. Daniel Bard used to pitch for the Red Sox. Why on earth would you keep
pitching in like Mexico?
Why would you keep him at the deadline?
It's if
you
free can get money, anything
for him, and he's still on the Rockies along with Trevor Story, like you said. So I mean, there's
saw Whit Merrifield was going to stay with the Royals as well. A lot of people thought that like maybe make a move for him.
Anthony Rizzo to the Yankees along with Joey Gallo. Chris Bryant.
Yankees trade deadline.
Absolutely. And Chris Bryant, the 2016 MVP, will head to the NL West as part of the San Francisco Giants. So
that's a good one.
Yeah. So if you got all that, we'll move on from the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Yeah, just a lot in the last 48 hours.
It's kind of like that year. It was kind of like that year where the NBA trade deadline, everybody switched point guards. Yeah. Like, everybody that one day just traded their point guard.
Glad to see, especially, you know, teams that have the division race in front of them, right? Like, glad to see them still going for it. Like,
I'm surprised to see Atlanta going for it because, like, Soroka.
No problem.
No Ozuna for obvious reasons. They're still trying to make a push. Now, I don't think they're going to catch them, especially with the Mets loading up. But
is Austin Riley going to get MVP votes? The way he's hitting the ball now,
he is crushing it, man. And you still kind of believe in him a little bit, but the fact that they were going for it, it surprises me. It's surprising me because I thought they would just kind of pack it in and let it and just say, you know what, it's a cursed year. Our two best players are hurt. We'll just move on.
We'll see what
our best position player and our best fielder.
We'll see what the outfielders can provide. The Braves love the addition of Rodriguez at the price they paid. That guy's been electric for the Pirates this year. The Pirates don't need a closer. They're never winning any games anyway. Like, what do you need a closer for? But then
a baseball team that often looks like they don't know how to play baseball. The Pittsburgh Pirates,
and they've traded away their best players from that team.
And I feel bad because like
they're gonna lose like 115 games.
Brian Hayes is a lot of fun, and he's gonna be their next Andrew McCutchen, who just ends up walking for nothing down the line. Because they don't know how to
gets traded, you know, with several years left, you know, for a bunch of magic beans. Yeah, that's how the story's probably gonna.
Oh yeah.
Let's get to the phones. Spectre has been. Or did we lose Spectre?
I think we lost.
Okay, Spectre. Sorry about that. We'll give us a call back if you get the opportunity. Tell you what, we did a little Major League Baseball talk, some concert talk here in segment one. We come back. We'll preview the Auburn football team for 2021. I'll ask you some questions about a topic that you've been covering very frequently on the Observer, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. Let's get back to The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Hour number two here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out. Bill Cameron taking the day off. He's enjoying, he'll enjoy ZZ Top tonight in Tuscaloosa and a historic ZZ Top show. So we're happy Bill's going to get to go see the boys in what should be an important show for ZZ Top following the passing of Dusty Hill earlier this week. Do want to mention a couple of things here. Of course, We're here in the WOW Business Studio. You can get 2 months free on super fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com. This hour of The Drive is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And if you've missed any of The Drive today or in recent days, podcasts of The Drive are available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can go to the ESPNAU.com website. You can go to the app, the ESPN 106.7 app, Apple, Google, Spotify. Just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron and you will find us. It's all presented by the Alabama Farmers Federation. Visit alphafarmers.org to find out more about the Ag Tag. You can also get the Auburn Observer podcast wherever you find podcasts, right?
Yeah, the weekend edition, usually up on Sundays. And anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can check out our weekend ones. And if you subscribe at The Observer for $6 a month or $60 a year, you get the midweek podcast as well.
Very little, even with a week to go before the start of fall practice, we've had very little football to talk about today because there have been some other things going on in the world of sports. But, I mean, this is a storyline-filled offseason, and I don't know how much of it will get answered before the opener, but we could get some clues on the direction of, you know, whether it's who figures to make a big role in any of the position battles out there, or if there's a player generating some buzz. I mean, what are you expecting a week out from the start of fall practice?
Well, my big thing is, on the offensive side of the ball, who steps up a wide receiver? Because we saw Javarius Johnson have a great spring. But, and not to take anything away, because I think Javarius Johnson is a really good player. This could be the year where he kind of breaks out for Auburn. The style of offense we've seen Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo employ in the past, like to use these smaller slot receivers. So, like, that makes sense. But no Xavion Capers, other guys banged up throughout the spring, Shedrick Jackson being one of them. Demetrius Robertson comes in. Who steps up? Because every time you talk to anybody about this wide receiver group, it's, we're talented, I like us, but, man, we've got a lot of work to do. And fall camp is where the heaviest part of this workload is going to have to be. If you think Bo Nix can take a step forward in this offense, which I can, if you think the offensive line can be better this year, which makes a lot of sense, you know what you got in your running backs. Can the wide receivers take that step forward? And how much of that do we see in fall camp? Who steps up? Is Xavion Capers back to kind of what he was before the injury, which would be huge for Auburn? How quickly does Demetrius Davis hit the ground running at Auburn? Do guys like Kobe Hudson and Elijah Canyon and Chad Jackson and guys we've seen a little bit take that next step? And I'm really curious to see who separates themselves at wide receiver.
Yeah, because that's an interesting idea, the notion of players separating themselves from the pack, because right now it does seem like
at it's receiver. Just a wide.
Yeah, I mean you have eight or nine scholarship players, and I mean if you want to bet on any one of them being Auburn's leading receiver this year, like, go nuts. You can probably get pretty good odds because I don't know if there's a favorite for that sort of thing. And what I'm interested to see, not just during fall practice, but also the first couple weeks of the season, is will there be, whether it's a more concretized rotation or just will we see two or three players more than everyone else at wide receiver?
Or hear about them more.
But once the season starts, I think we would see. I mean, would the snap counts bear out that you have two or three receivers playing a lot more than everyone else? Because right now, I don't know what the philosophy will be. If it's, especially early in the season, is it going to be, let's evaluate as many of these guys as we can while still trying to be productive offensively? Or, could they settle on couple of receivers that they know are the guys that need to be out there more than the others? And, the first couple of games will be about getting those guys as many reps as they can.
And I would be remiss not to mention some guys we haven't seen. J.J. Evans coming back from his injury, didn't play last season. Malcolm Johnson Jr., got great speed. Seems to be a guy that people are high on. And, of course, Tavarius Dawson, who ends up staying with it. I've heard really good things about him during the summer. So,
And I would maybe lump Newton in there, too, as far as guys we've...
Him and Shedrick Jackson are kind of those guys who's like, you know what they can do, and you know that they've been out there, but it's like, are they guys who are going to be able to get targets? Because, like, they serve roles well, especially blocking, and that's still going to be very important in this offense, but... And then the other thing kind of working with it is when you talk about who's going to separate themselves, how many are going to separate themselves, you also got the tight end position where they're going to rely on them. And I think they have not hid from the fact that we have more experience and depth at tight end, or at least we know what we've got a little bit more at tight end than wide receiver, and we might be able to lean on that early. Even without J.J. Pegues, when you move him over the defensive line, you still have John Samuel Shanker, who, reminder, you didn't really see much of him at all in the spring because of his baseball obligations. But then Luke Deal, I think Luke Deal has a real good chance of being Auburn's top tight end this season. Lot to like about Braden Frazier and his size, Tyler Fromm. I mean, you can just go down the list.
And since we're, I mean, if you, no reason not to toss Lanthan King, especially in the passing game. Right,
some of that second and third string work I saw in the spring, I was really impressed with Lanthan King.
And then maybe they're not ready to ask Lanthan King to do everything a tight end is expected to do,
but find a role.
But maybe,
or a
maybe
package.
Yeah, maybe he could maybe he could run some routes. I mean, maybe he could be out there as. I mean, I don't know if. I mean, I think maybe some of the stuff you'd be worried about down the line would be more blocking related or more
assignment.
But I wonder about as a receiver or as a target. You know, maybe I mean,
and that's why,
certainly looks the part.
And, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I like Deal a lot. Because you saw him playing that fullback role in the spring. That's going to be used. He was a great blocking tight end for Auburn last season. Statistically, he did a really good job. And I thought in the spring, he looked like he could be pretty crisp on his route running. He's more athletic than people give him credit for because we just didn't see him do a whole lot of that at Auburn.
The J.J. Pegues thing, right? I mean, as exciting as J.J. Pegues was in glimpses last year, the decision to move him from tight end to defensive line, maybe J.J. Pegues, and I, after hearing Owen Papone name check him at Media Days last week as the second defensive lineman he mentioned having an impressive offseason, maybe there's more of a role for J.J. Pegues immediately on the defensive line than I assumed.
I think that and tackle kind of back in that non nose rotation. If you feel really good about Colby Wooden and you feel really good about Zacchaeus Walker, well, who's after that?
But I maintain you do not move an athlete like J.J. Pegues to a different position if you don't feel good about what you've got remaining at tight end. And to move a guy like J.J. Pegues to the defensive line as early as they decided to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think indicates to me that Deal and Fromm and Frazier and maybe to an extent Lanthan King, although he was the younger guy, but
Shanker and you just haven't
and,
seen
and, him and, Sh- yeah, and Shanker was playing baseball, but maybe they feel very good about what those five players could do, even with J.J. Pegues on the defensive line and how it shakes out.
Yeah, not only is it better for J.J. Pegues right now or in his future, it might be good for Auburn right now. You know. And look, man, I was the believer that they were going to keep him there because he was really good at it. But a guy that size and that athleticism, you can make more money playing on the defensive line at the next level. And so I think it might take him some time, but A, he's got a future there. And B, like you said, Dan, like you don't go away from that unless you're confident.
And maybe it'll take time.
Yep.
Maybe not. Right, I don't know. I think it would be
maybe the dude who's as big as a house and can move really well is just going to be good at playing football.
I'd be a lot more concerned about a move the other way as far as how much time it'll take. If you got a defensive lineman you like and you say let's turn this guy into a tight end, see what happens. Maybe that takes a while. I feel like a lot of the stuff that a defensive lineman needs to be good at, J.J. Pegues can already do.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of technique to it.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong there, but the strategic and thinking a lot happens more on the offensive side of the ball. Whereas defense, it's technique, but also execution and effort. There's a lot of effort.
And being a combination of strength and speed at that size as well. I mean, there's reasons.
Because you got to keep in mind the nature of defense. You're there to wreck stuff. On offense, you're there to run it correctly.
Drew, we got time for Spectre in the segment, you think? Or should we? Okay, let's get to Spectre. Spectre, what's up?
My goodness, man, you long-winded. Let me tell you, I forgot what I was going to say again.
It helps to be long-winded when there's dead air, Spectre.
touche. ZZ Top. Tush is the best song.
Oh, that's a good one, too. Don't... I mean, you...
Apparently written in Alabama, was written in Birmingham. I learned that this week.
I like the Eliminator hits, but there's something about Tush or LaGrange. You know that pre-80s ZZ Top sound is great too.
The greatest hits album is the best album, I think. Anyway, let me get to what Shadow was talking about. Including Pat Dye, Auburn's had his average out 8 to 10 years on a coach. So let's hope he's got 10 years to get it done. And if he does that, so be it. But if he has if he goes undefeated goes winless in the SEC, he's out of there.
Oh no! The clock could start very early with a really disappointing season early on. Spectre, we haven't. How are you feeling about the Harsin hire so far this offseason?
Hey, it's like a car you bought online. You hadn't even drove it yet.
Well, you'll see it on the road this fall.
Yeah, when I get on the road with it, I'll let you know how it runs.
Well, I just hope it. Yeah, I hope it runs. That's the I think a lot of folks are feeling that same way. No, that's you're absolutely right, Spectre. I think there's I think the point Shadow was making was about like what the guys had accomplished before coming to Auburn, which I do think you can say that Auburn in the search for the best possible football coach, they haven't gone out and hired guys with. A long, long list of accomplishments as head coaches in the past. Brian Harsin is probably the most accomplished head coach that Auburn. Brian Harsin has probably accomplished more as a head coach than anyone Auburn has hired in several decades as a football coach. But sometimes the young up and coming coordinator can work out too. Although Brian Harsin very clearly has a way of doing things that I think the decade at Boise helped. Formulate. Appreciate it, Spectre. We'll come back with more. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Stick around. This is The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final half hour of the week here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us. And appreciate all the phone calls so far. I think some interesting stuff. We mentioned some of the storylines offensively.
Yep.
going into this season. I think because Auburn's defense, certainly for the last few years, has performed more often than not. Uh-huh. At a high level, that sometimes I think defensive performance is taken for granted lately, yes. And it's this assumption that Auburn
it's
will have
so hard to be really good on defense these
yeah.
days.
Yeah, and I think there's the assumption that Auburn will just have a championship defense because they've had one a couple of times in the last few years,
yep.
And maybe they will. I mean, there are some outstanding players on the Auburn defense. There are a couple spots where Auburn's, they're hoping someone steps up, or they're going to see what they've got in a battle between a couple of different players.
Yep.
What do you find most intriguing about the Auburn defense a week out from fall camp?
To me, the only position of intrigue on this defense is the edge. Derek Hall is going to be one of your key guys, but who else, right? Inside linebacker, you're set. Defensive line, you may not know who all exactly is going to be where, but you like the depth there. Secondary, you're going to be fine pretty much everywhere, especially with the safeties and nickels you got in the offseason. That edge spot, it is such a new position. It is a new way of looking at things for an Auburn defense because so often, I don't know, man. Like, I've been trying to dig back. Has Auburn ever run a defense quite like this before? I don't think so. Ooh. Most of my life, it has been pretty much you're going to run this kind of like four down front most of the time.
I mean, the time for a transition would have probably been you know, either going from Tuberville to Chizik,
right.
But then you hired a former Tuberville defensive coordinator as the new head coach, and I don't think Gene changed all that much about what Tommy was doing. And then, I mean, even going from Chizik to, you know, the Malzahn hire in 13 when you bring in Ellis Johnson, like, I don't know if, I mean.
Base 425.
Yeah, I think there was, I think it was a lot of,
And that was a 425 before 425 was the actual base. You know, Kevin Steele comes in and that ends up being the base defense because you have to have a nickel on the field at all times.
Yeah, it seems like with, you know, in a lot of situations, a coach may come in and look at the defense and say, you know, I'm not going to run my full thing because, you know, we don't have the players to fit it or personnel. Something. It seems like Auburn has the personnel to do a lot of different things depending on what the defensive coordinator wants to do, and including what Mason's doing this year.
And I think Colby Wooden is one of those guys who's going to thrive in this new system. But you look at the edge position, you like what Derek Hall's got, but who else? Like, who else is there? Caleb Johnson had a pretty good spring. T.D. Moultrie, you always like coming back. For
I kind of think the favorite's Eku Liota.
Yeah,
like you're with okay.
Mm-hmm. Like you've got T.D. coming back, and like you never count out a dude who's coming back for his super senior season at that. And then the newcomers Eku Liota, Dylan Brooks, also in the mix as well. It's like when you don't have We don't have Jaron Handy anymore. When you lose certain guys that were going to probably be factors at that position, it's pretty wide open, and that is what I'm going to be very curious in seeing, because I think Auburn there was a thing really the last few seasons.
Tavici Okoli probably in that mix.
Tavici Okoli,
right? As far as like defense,
I'll be interested to see where Tavici Okoli ends up playing, because like he could play kind of everywhere. There was a thing for the last few seasons that was like Auburn needs a go-to pass rusher. You know, there was no Jeff Holland. There was no sack guy, speed rusher off the edge. Nobody who was really going to terrify you that. But you were able to cover up for it because you had Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson. And on the interior, they did so much damage that you could be a really good pass rush without necessarily having a top-tier speed guy, right, off the side. This new defense is not going to necessarily rely on one guy to be your main pass rusher, but you are going to get a lot of it from that edge. I mean, they're going to blitz more. They're going to disguise things. They're going to move dudes around. They're going to be creative. But if Derek Hall can unleash and be a Jeff Holland type of player this year, you know, you think your thoughts on Auburn's defense increase exponentially, because last season one of the reasons why they had such a hard time getting off the field on third down is that they were not pressuring teams at a pretty high rate.
And I'd be curious, and this wasn't just a problem Auburn was dealing with, this was something that the world was dealing with last offseason, but if there's a position, especially on defense, where being away from your team's strength and conditioning program, the way being away from it in a way that you wouldn't be in a normal off season, you know, having to do a lot of that stuff yourself, mm-hmm. Away from the team, I think that might have hurt some of the bigger defensive linemen.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure if conditioning was an issue for interior defensive linemen for Auburn last year, but I wonder if there's the expectation that Truesdale can be better this year than he was last year.
I think it was such a shift when you don't have Derek Brown anymore, and you don't have Marlon Davidson anymore, and it's like I've said it before, I think Derek Brown might be the best dude who's ever played defense at Auburn. I think you can make an argument for talent wise being up there. And that loss is significant because it changes so much. Everyone around him is better because of it. And when you don't have that presence anymore, your defense has to be different. And I think we saw some of that last season. They just, not bad talent up front. That talent just was not quite as consistent as they had been when you had, a top five pick and a second rounder up there.
And that interior defensive line, which last year had to move on without Marlon Davidson and Derek Brown. I don't know if they, even by the end of the season really felt like they had, that they had figured out their identity and who were the leaders of that position or anything.
Yeah.
Talking to Owen at Media Days, it sounded like inexperience was something that hurt the defensive line at times last year.
Yeah.
This year, I mean, you have some players who may be playing more than they have at any point in their Auburn career, but I don't know how many truly inexperienced guys. I mean, if anything, if you got an inexperienced guy out there early this year,
it's a good sign.
It's a sign that he's a puppy with big paws, right? Yeah. I mean, it's a sign that you got a...
If you see a Lee Hunter out there early this year, you're feeling really good.
Yeah, you see Dylan or a Coley or Lee Hunter out there like early on, yeah, that's a sign. And if you want to lump J.J. Pegues into that category because he's new to the defensive line, like those are players that... Yeah, I mean, it's tough to necessarily count on them from the outside looking in.
Right.
But if they're on the field early, that's a sign of what kind of fall camp they
have. Well, and I also think that, like, second only to running back, defensive line is a place where guys can play early, right away. We saw this all the time under Rodney Garner, not only because he recruited at a really high level, but it's just a, you know, young defensive linemen play a lot. There's more opportunities. The rotation is usually deeper than it is at other positions. A little bit more thinking, a little bit more knowing the playbook and where to be at linebacker, especially in the secondary, especially wide receiver, quarterback, those play offensive line for sure. Defensive line, to an extent, kind of like running backs, like, yes, there's a ton of technique involved, and you got to know what you're doing on certain play, but there's a lot of just pin your ears back and let it and go to work at running back and at defensive line. So I think that's why you see kids play a lot earlier than that, and Auburn's got some really good kids. I mean, Lee Hunter is large.
And it's unfortunate that we can't talk about Jeremiah Wright with these other defensive linemen, because I think that they're... I mean,
a phenomenal first 2 weeks out of him before that injury.
Like, if Jeremiah Wright were healthy going into this offseason, I think he would have been a larger topic of conversation.
Well, and then also, you know, we're overlooking the fact here on this defensive line, Tony Fair, Marcus Harris. I like Marcus Harris a lot. He played really well at Kansas, and he's also one of those guys like Zacharius Walker, like Marquise Burks, where it's like that end tackle, not a nose, but a guy that can play on the inside, whether it's in a three-man front or a two-man front, and get to work that way. And I think he could be a guy that turns some heads this year, because he was really good on a really bad Kansas team last year.
Two more players that were mentioned by name by Owen Papo last week in talking about some of the defensive linemen that had impressed him.
And it's hard. It's hard because at Kansas – it wasn't like Marcus Harris was having dudes create stuff for him. Like, that was a bad football team. So if you're shining on a bad football team on the defensive side of the ball, that's like, okay, well, you're making some plays. You're good one-on-one. And he definitely was last season at Kansas. And then Tony Fair was huge for you because you have another big body that can plug up holes, that is used to playing inside in a three-man front, can be that nose that you need so that when you have to give Tyron Truesdell a breather, you can have a rotation. Yeah. And it also allows you for guys like Lee Hunter, like the Marquise Robinsons of the world. You might be gigantic, but you will be able to play them in maybe some positions that can be a little more free to go after the quarterback instead of just being early down nose kind of gap pluggers.
Yeah, it's the names that we've been talking about all offseason, and also, you know, the possibility of a name or two that gets mentioned a little bit more infrequently when you have a brand new coaching staff. I mean, someone could go from who's that to penciled in as a starter, you know, in a couple of weeks. That's how big these next few weeks are in the first fall camp for Brian Harsin and his new staff. That's how big it is for the players trying to battle for some playing time this year. 334-321-1390, the number to dial if you want to get in on the conversation. Let's get to the phones, and Dan is hanging on. What's up, Dan?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Dan. Good to hear from you, bud.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, even though we've lost a few guys on the line, it seems like obviously we're still pretty stacked. So these first two games are a great opportunity for us to just rotate literally three deep at every position on the line and then get good video on all these guys and find out who really, you know, can be those difference makers, you know.
Yeah, and to your point, one of the things that that Brian Harsin said last week at SEC Media Days, he was like really stretching, like, man, I can't wait to get to this first game because I want to see what my team looks like on the field. You can look, I mean, we know what they look like in practice going against each other in scrimmages, and you can get a good idea, but it's Akron and it's Alabama State. They're not going to be world beaters by any means, but like just the fact that you get to play against somebody who's not you is going to be big for information on that to get your A for Penn State. So I think you're absolutely right. And honestly, the way Akron's played the last few years and Alabama State being an FCS team, you're going to have that flexibility to kind of do it, even with a brand new system and a brand new defense.
And I would add to that that even in a year where a lot of teams around the SEC and around college football are playing big games in week one, I think Auburn caught a break by having a couple of weeks with
this
new
schedule works out really well for a first year coach.
With a new coaching staff and with some of the new position battles going on, I think Auburn has two games to figure out the rotation before they go to Penn State.
And I really do think it helps, too, because sometimes you might have a guy that has immense talent, but because he's the third or fourth guy down the list, he never gets that opportunity in the beginning, and then he gets lost in the fold. So, you know, it might be like a Hunter or somebody like that who maybe wouldn't get that opportunity right away can actually, you know, show something and say, hey, you know what, this guy deserves to get some snaps every game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you never have too many linemen, you know, on that defense. You definitely... You know, if you can rotate three groups, that's an amazing thing. You know, even that probably won't happen exactly that way, but it is.
Well, there are a couple of positions where it seems like Auburn has to, you know, they got 8 or 10 guys and they got to figure out which two, you know, they can lean on the most, and receivers one of those.
And sometimes, especially on the defensive front, when it turns into game day, guys kind of take, especially young guys, they get those early opportunities and the light kind of switches on for them. The one I always go back to is Tyron Truesdale. We watched Tyron Truesdale in fall camp his first year. I honestly thought he wasn't going to make it. The way he was, like, the practices we saw, it was like, man, he's struggling. And so the first couple of games that season, though, you see him get in the rotation and holding his own. And it's like, you know what? Those guys have to kind of go through it, and it might not be you might not be even coming out of camp in high regard, but get an opportunity to start hitting some people that you don't know, and it makes it makes a big difference. So yeah, I 100% agree. And if Auburn is in that spot where they're that deep on the line, you're in a good position.
I appreciate it, guys.
Absolutely appreciate the phone call, Dan. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Real quick, one other thing, since we went around the field a little bit. Didn't talk too much about the secondary. Seems like Auburn, you know, goes into the season feeling very good about not just the returning talent in the secondary, but also what they've added to that returning talent. A player that I think gets a little bit, and I guess Roe Torrence is in this category as well, because it's such a new addition to the team. You know, just a few weeks ago, he wasn't on anyone's radar, and he goes from that to could be battling for snaps.
Playing time,
for sure. this fall.
That outside corner spot with so much flexibility with guys like Nehemiah Pritchett and all those versatile dudes. You know, somebody who's just an outside corner might be able to get a good, you know, role behind the likes of you know, Roger McCreary and Drayshon Miller and those guys.
I think there's going to be, and look, maybe because Auburn has brought in some young safeties who also want to get on the field this year, I feel like there's a big role for Knighton this season. Bydarius Knighton is the guy.
You don't get a guy who's getting his fifth year of college football without knowing, like, you want him to play a specific
role. And
he's played
so much college football in the secondary. I mean, it's just, I mean,
this translates. I know it's not like, you know, the OVC is not necessarily out of this world competition, but I do remember Casey Dunn being a very big pickup for Auburn, even though at a different position, but being a really good FCS player. If you've been doing it for a while, I mean, there's an advantage to being a grown man out there having 4 years of college experience against, you know, dudes that might be newer to the game.
And it could be like Casey Dunn, it can also be something of a measuring stick for your other players.
Yep.
Because, like, if you're better than Bydarius Knighton, that's great. You're better than a guy with 30 plus career starts to his name as safety and, you know, at a high level D1, you know, FCS high level.
He's got nearly 50 starts.
Yeah. I mean, 50. I mean,
he's a 4 year starter.
And if you're not better than him right now, then he's going to start. And that's we'll try again next year. But I mean, it's a nice problem to have. And I think that's compared to some of the other additions, a little bit under the radar, but I could see Knighton playing a ton this year for the Auburn Tigers. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We will take our final break and come back to wrap things up. You're listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
The Drive continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. final segment of the afternoon here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And Justin, once again, tell folks about all the fine work you do at Observer HQ.
AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there with the email. $6 a month or $60 a year. I will give you three or four newsletters about Auburn football and men's basketball per week. Trying to give you something you might not get everywhere else. Kind of like some of our recruiting breakdowns, some of our X's and O's stuff. When the season starts, film rooms, stat stories, stuff like that. And yeah, we also do a couple podcasts as well. Myself and Painter Sharpless. If you want to listen and check out the podcast for free, you can do so. The weekend editions are up wherever you listen to your podcast. And then if you do sign up, though, for, like I said, $6 a month or $60 a year, you get a bonus podcast once a week. So we get you about four stories, two podcasts a week, all of them emailed to your inbox. And it works out to, you know, just a quarter or so, 25, 30 cents per thing.
Right. And I would add, too, as a proud subscriber, I would add that it's a very accessible way to get the stuff sent, you know, having it sent directly to you.
I tell people all the time, it's the easiest way I've ever been able to get my work out to people, because, you know, if you follow somebody and read their stuff, you know, you might be on part of a message board and you have to go, you know, you'll see the links and click it, like the guys over at 247 Arrivals who do an excellent job. You might have like AL.com or some of these places on your homepage. You could subscribe to places like I did at the past.
They still covered Auburn there at AL.com?
Well, the Athletic, you know, you had to pay for it, but also you had to go to the app, you had to go to something like that. Once you sign up, I mean, everything I put out is going to go straight to your inbox. Like, you don't have to wait for a link or you don't have to go search it yourself. It'll pop up right there in your email. My grandfather is 75 years old. This is the easiest way I've ever gotten him to be able to read the stuff I write. And I mean, it's that easy. It really is that easy.
And I would say that while we haven't had, I mean, aside from media days, like maybe in the last 6 weeks, there have been a ton of headlines regarding, yeah, you know, how this team's going to change. That I mean, the month of August, there's news, and we'll get stories.
We're going to be rolling, man.
And then, yeah.
Hopefully we get some access and we get some practice observations going, because they did really well in the spring.
Very interested to see, yeah, what sort of invitations, you know, or, you know, what media access
you know what?
Is out
I mean,
there.
Like, I'll be very curious to see that as well, because in the spring, it was pretty good. Spring was a whole lot better than I expected.
Oh, I would say not just in terms of the media being able to watch practice, but also in who you guys got to talk to.
Absolutely. Like,
I thought they did a really good job of keeping
Brian Harsin. Brian Harsin might not be the friendliest dude in the world with the media, and I'm not saying he's mean or a jerk or anything. It's just like, it seems like one of the things he has to do.
Maybe Brian Harsin has figured out that if you let other people talk to the media, you don't have to do it as much.
There you go. And then secondly, the thing with that is that, you know, like you said, he has other people talking, which is pretty big. And, you know, he also knows that if he talks for a while, he doesn't have to take as many questions.
Well, here's
the other thing. Is like, your job isn't to be nice to me or be super friendly to me.
And he's not.
I'm fine with that.
I think Brian Harsin's also not terribly scared of what the players are going to say. Nope. Like, you know, he's got a group of guys that he seems to.
And he's not worried about what he's going to say either.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So we'll maybe media access next week with Harsin before fall camp. I would imagine maybe we're talking to him again next week. So you're not going to want to miss that. We'll cover it all week long on The Drive. Justin, thank you.
Absolutely.
Outstanding as always. Drew at the controls, great job. We'll be back on Monday. Brian Matthews from ArmoredSports.com will join us. Bill will be back to tell us about the ZZ Top concert.
Yeah.
I should be here too. You never know, but yeah. I think I'll be here.
I think they pay you to be here.
I would expect nothing less. All right, we'll talk to you then. This is Dan Peck signing off. Good night.